How many people do you know who struggle with their health? Chances are, whether they show it or not, most of the people in your life do. And chances are, you're one of them. Whether you're dealing with anxiety, depression, endometriosis, acne, eczema, autoimmune, thyroid, Lyme, brain fog, fatigue, or any other symptom or condition, you're far from alone. Living with symptoms has become the new normal. So no more guessing games. It's time to get answers. Welcome to the Medical Medium Podcast. I'm Anthony William.
We're talking about sexually transmitted bugs. They're on the rise. STIs, also called STDs. There's many different kinds. So much information for the world to learn, and the pharmaceutical industry and the hierarchy doesn't want anyone wise about STIs and wants people to believe that all the sex bugs out there are pretty much the same and you only have to worry if your pee burns and you're in a lot of pain. They make you believe that everything is treatable with an antibiotic, so don't worry if you get sick, it's all beatable. But it's not exactly true. When using antibiotics, they not always pull through, and there's a reason for this. There are better protocols for today's STD challenges, so many people can try to live in bliss, but get ready, we are going down to the crazy bug town. Get ready for this. No, I'll call you back. Yeah, I'm at the doctor's office right now. Yeah. All right, Nick, just hold on. Okay, I'll call you back. Okay, bye. Yeah, hi, doctor? Yeah, hi. Thank you for helping me. Pee in a cup? Okay, let's just give me a second here. Can I go in here? Okay. All right. Let me just close this door. Okay. Okay. Oh, nurse, this is for the doctor. Okay. Oh, there he is. Hey. Here's some pee. Okay, sit down or stand up. Oh, I'm standing up. Okay. Oh, whoa. What's that Q-tip? Wait. You're not going to stick that. Ow. Ooh. Oh, my. Ooh. Oh, God, dear Lord. That was awful. Are you going to culture that? I'm sweating. What do you think it is? I hope it's nothing serious. Yeah. It burns when I pee. Yeah, and there's some discharge. What was that question? Is it productive? I don't know what you mean. Is it productive? The discharge? I don't know. I guess it's productive. Okay, I'll sit here. It's on the rise. Not so common anymore. STDs are now spreading fast and becoming common. Is it from more sex? Are people having more sex out there? Is it people having more and more sex with different partners? And that's why STDs and STIs are on the rise. Nope. It's about the same as it's been for the last 5 to 7 years. But yet, STIs are not only exploding, but they're changing in strength. And they're eventually going to keep on mutating and mutating faster and faster as the years go by. STD history is changing, and it's going to keep changing. The COVID lockdown, if you remember, was really hard on a lot of people. It was like the COVID sex shutdown. Anybody who usually goes out there and about looking for partners and so forth, or the dating scene and having sex, pretty much all of it was like at a halt. So you would think that STIs and STDs would have dropped substantially because of that. But no, the minute the lockdowns were over, everybody started partying. And maybe that partying actually moved it up, where now that's why the STIs and the STDs have grown substantially upward, have risen. But not really, no. It just balanced out the lack of sex everybody was having during the lockdown. if you ask somebody out there and you say, somebody who's on the scene, the dating scene and so forth, and you mention sexually transmitted diseases or sexually transmitted infections, and they would look at you and probably be like, what are you talking about? I'm just dating. Everything's good. That's kind of weird. Am I supposed to be worried? Am I supposed to be concerned? And then if you find somebody that is concerned, what are they concerned about? What's their biggest worry? What's their biggest fear? If you mention STIs and STDs, it would take a moment for them to actually think about and figure that out in their own heads. They would say, well, is it herpes? Is that what I'm worried about? Yeah, herpes. That's what it is. I don't want to catch herpes. So after picking their brain for a minute, they would come to the realization that really herpes is pretty much what they'd be worried about. But then another person, if you were to ask them, herpes wouldn't even be on the radar. That would be an okay thing to catch. Their concern would be HIV. They would be worried about contracting AIDS, HIV. And then you ask another person and you talk to them and you say, what about STDs and STIs? You're on the scene, you're dating all the time. What are you worried about? And they may not even mention AIDS or HIV. They may never mention herpes. They might just say, I don't want HPV. That's on my mind. I'm not wanting HPV. But what's interesting is you would probably most likely never hear them say chlamydia, or hear them say syphilis, or hear them say gonorrhea, or what they used to call years and years and decades ago, the clap. You're not going to hear them say they're worried about that. That's not a concern. These are things of the past. No one has syphilis anymore, but yet they do. People who get chlamydia just have to go to the doctor and get an antibiotic and it goes away. That's what everybody believes in college and the universities, when chlamydia is going around everywhere and they're all at the doctor's office getting an antibiotic until the doctor says, oh, you're clear, you're good. So it's kind of like a non-concern. Gonorrhea, if you ask somebody, they're like, who has gonorrhea? Isn't that gone? Wasn't that like World War II when people had gonorrhea? And they think to themselves, this is old folklore. This is diseases from the past. Or this is diseases from the 1980s, which seems like 100 years ago to somebody who's in their early 20s. The 1980s is like the 1920s or the 1890s to somebody who's actually in their 20s now. That's how long ago that is. And so they think, well, STDs, STIs, and then they think about science today. So when you go to school, you're taught that science is God, and science is always right and has all the answers, and you're protected under this science veil. So if you're at spring break somewhere on a beach and you're vacationing and you have sex with someone and you get a rash or a discharge or some burning pain, you're pretty comfortable that science has you covered and everything is going to be okay. You just got to get to the doctor, get an antibiotic, maybe a steroid, and then move on with your life. And that's something that school teaches us. It teaches us that we're going to be safe and good and everything's going to be warm and fuzzy. And we have the medical science world. It has our back, but not entirely when it comes down to this, because history is changing right now. It's changing as we speak. Something's happening to the bacterial aspect of STIs. Something's changing that did not happen before or in the past. Every time someone gets a boo-boo, they take an antibiotic. It's been happening for years. You get a cough, an antibiotic. You get a UTI, an antibiotic. You get a yeast infection, an antibiotic. You get a sty, an antibiotic. You get a scratch on the skin, an antibiotic, whether it's a topical or an internal or an oral. Acne, ingrown hair, ingrown toenails, dental work of any kind, practically, surgeries of any kind, rosacea, and the list goes on. Because antibiotics have been passed around like candy because they've been used so extensively. So they've been used constantly with a lot of different patients where it's always in their regime, whether it's once a month or whether it's once a year, which is still a lot. Or it's somebody who just has Lyme disease and they just went through 3 years or 5 years of antibiotic treatments. However it's delved out and wherever it's delved out, it's changing the structure of bacteria. So let's look at chlamydia. The chlamydia somebody contracted years ago is much different than the chlamydia somebody contracts today. Like, for example, years ago, chlamydia did not know about antibiotics. It didn't have an understanding. It was highly allergic to antibiotics. That means many, many decades ago, when someone had chlamydia and an antibiotic went into their body, it killed the chlamydia fast and quickly and harshly. The chlamydia couldn't survive so easily. When antibiotics first came out on the scene, it was like a miracle. If someone had a bacterial infection, an STI, an STD like chlamydia, it was like the sky opened up, the heavens opened up. It was an instant cure for most people, right off the running. But 8-9 decades of doctors prescribing antibiotics for everything, and not using natural approaches or herbal approaches, just antibiotics for every single patient that walked through the door because it was this incredible panacea, it dumbed things down. Bacteria got smart. STIs, STDs, bacteria, sexually transmitted, became highly intelligent because it always had a taste of an antibiotic somewhere, somehow, even when it was just slightly in its dormant phase in somebody, or it wasn't even creating a big problem. Somebody had a little bit of chlamydia tucked away somewhere inside their liver or inside their lymphatic system or somewhere in their body, and they were taking an antibiotic for something else, a cough, a cold, some kind of bronchitis, a sty, some acne, and the chlamydia that was inside the body ended up tasting that antibiotic and surviving the taste test. Decades ago in the past, sexually transmitted bacteria like chlamydia, it was always high grade. You got the infection, it exploded, it was there. You took the antibiotic, it went away. But there was always this high grade factor. But now it's changed. All these different bacteria infections are low grade factors now. They're just harboring. They're just lying inside organs. They're lying inside reproductive organs. They may not be making a big scene or stink or a problem or a big infection in the moment. They may not even be able to be detected, but they're there nevertheless. And they're sitting there on a low-grade level. So men carry these low-grade infections. They carry low-grade chlamydia, low-grade syphilis, low-grade gonorrhea, low-grade lots of different varieties of bacteria. And they don't get affected by it in the moment. They're just living with it. They're not running to a doctor. They don't need to. Everything seems okay. And they become the inseminators. They actually become the super spreaders. So why men over women? Am I discriminating here? Is that what this is? No, it's men over women. The reason why is because men don't have a menstruation cycle and they don't ovulate. And because of that, their immune system stays somewhat stabilized, somewhat middle ground. They can work out at the gym. They can exercise. They can work their job. They can even do lack of sleep nights. They can party. They can drink. They can vape. They can do a lot of things and just be somewhat stable and seem okay. And they can carry those low-grade bacteria. They can carry it in their system for year after year after year. and it won't be noticeable. They won't see it at the doctor's office. They won't see it really in testing. It's low grade. It's at a small level, but yet they're the super spreader. So when they're with a woman, they spread that, and a woman will see the problem and notice the problem with her health. A woman's immune system is challenged every single month. Ovulation lowers the immune system. Menstruation lowers the immune system by 80%. So 80% of the immune system leaves other organs, other places of the body, and it heads to the reproductive organs to protect the reproductive system. And because of that, women have these ups and downs with their immune systems. They're easily subjected to bacteria and viruses, other pathogens, and they can notice it. But this leads to a problem, not just for the woman's health, but to the woman's reputation, because the woman will be blamed for the chlamydia outbreak. The woman will be blamed for anything. For example, if a man is carrying a low-grade strep infection or multiple varieties of streps, low-grade in the man's system, and then the woman comes down with a UTI, and that UTI is strep or a kidney infection, a bladder infection, or any kind of infection. The guy doesn't have the infection. The guy's fine. It's like, what's wrong, honey? Why are you so sick? The woman has the really bad strep infection and is at the doctor's office getting drugs and treatment. So the woman's the problem. She's the one with the UTI. She's the one with the strep infection. The guy's fine. He's going to work. He's at the gym 5 o'clock in the morning. He's doing good. He's drinking and eating what he wants. And the woman's sitting there struggling until she's done with her UTI. So let's talk about chlamydia for a second. Why are there thousands upon tens of thousands upon hundreds of thousands of women in universities coming down with chlamydia and going to see their doctor when there's only a speck, 1%, 2% males going in for chlamydia? How does that work? And if you are a guy and you're with a group of guys, a bunch of friends, maybe a fraternity you're in, and you actually go to a doctor because of chlamydia, you're going to be called a wuss. You're going to be the wuss, because that's how many far and few, that's how many men really see a doctor for chlamydia. And this includes older men, men in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and so forth. They just don't really get a chlamydia diagnosis so much. It's rare, it's far and few, but yet it's exploding out there, and men are the carriers. But yet when a man gets a bad cough, for some reason, whether there's a flu going around and now it's a bronchitis, and they go on antibiotics, that chlamydia that's in there, low grade, half dormant, ends up experiencing that antibiotic, making the chlamydia stronger, not weaker. And that goes with any kind of bacteria. Like for instance, strep, same thing. It gets used to the antibiotics. It ends up strengthening and overriding the antibiotics. So then when it gets passed on to somebody else and they get it, then they're on the antibiotic. It's not a stranger to that antibiotic. So only maybe 75% of that strep will get killed off. The 25% will stay behind. It'll be there. And then the immune system will try to regulate it. But this becomes a problem all on its own. Because if the person has that strep there, then goes and collects a chlamydia or an additional strep, now it's an overload. And then more antibiotics are used for any kind of infections, whether it's UTIs, bladder infections, vaginal discharge, or any other kind of infection. It's back to that kind of thing. The bacteria is getting used to the antibiotics. It's overriding them. A portion of that bug stays alive. And then if someone's with someone else, they pass that bug on to somebody else. And now they got a stronger version of what it was from before. Here's a part that I don't particularly like. I think it's a part that when you learn about it, it gives you a true understanding of what's going on. A chlamydia can't just appear out of nowhere. It can't just all of a sudden exist. For example, it just started today. Or in somebody, chlamydia just all of a sudden erupted and was created out of thin air inside someone. It has to come from someplace else, whether it's picked up from a public restroom, a restaurant, a plate, a fork, a knife in a restaurant, whether sipping off of somebody else's glass, or you just get it through sexual activity, or you get it from utensils or tools at the dentist's office or at the doctor's office. But either way, it didn't create itself inside of you. It had to come from somewhere, which leads us to this part that's kind of bothersome. It means it's been alive and living for a very long time. It didn't just create itself in someone else and then it got to you. It didn't just create itself in someone else and someone else and someone else and then got into you. It created itself a long time ago. These bugs are old. They have history. They've been in a lot of people for decades and decades. That means chlamydia that somebody picks up during spring break or somewhere else in their life or wherever is almost ancient. It's old. It's been an STI, STD going all the way back for years and years. It could have been in 10 people, 20 people, 50 people, 500 people, 5,000 people for the last 8, 9, 10 decades. And this goes with syphilis as well. It goes with any kind of sexually transmitted bacteria or any kind of sexually transmitted virus. The same goes. It could have been in 5,000 people throughout the decades and passed along. It's somebody else's and somebody else's. It's old. It has history. It's plagued somebody else or just been dormant in somebody else or just been self-regulated low grade in somebody else. But it's been around. And all along the way, these bugs have carried survival information with them, intelligence from other people's bodies, other people's emotional experiences, other people's adrenaline surges, and other people's toxicity levels. It carries all of this intelligence, including drugs that someone takes medically prescribed, like antibiotics. It carries that information too, along with it. And with the amount of antibiotics people are prescribed out there, you would think nothing lives that's a bacteria or anything of the sort. No pathogen lives. The amount of antibiotic use that's happening and being prescribed out there. That means how would chlamydia, how would syphilis, how would gonorrhea, how would anything survive? How would strep survive? How would anything with the amount of antibiotics, the barrage of antibiotics in everyone for so many years, there should be very little left. There should be very little breakouts of, say, chlamydia or gonorrhea or anything of that sort. There shouldn't be any of it left when you think about it. But that would be a bummer if there was none of it left. Because the hierarchy, the industries, the evil demon in the sky, whatever you want to call it, wants people sick. They want people to have doctor bills. They want people to have a poor quality of life. They want people gone. They want people to be miserable and suffering. Yes, believe it or not, it's true. They do. And there's obvious reasons. But the problem here is these bugs didn't just naturally appear and gravitate to the degree they are in now and in us now. Instead, they've been placed out there. These bugs were raised in labs. All of them. The STDs, raised in labs. The viruses, herpes, simplex 1, simplex 2. And I'm not even going into the Epstein-Barrs, which are easily sexually transmitted, and the HHV-6s, and the shingles, and the cytomegaloviruses, the HPV, all the different bugs we have out there. They're sexually transmitted as well. But all of these bugs were raised in labs, and they were placed into our environment purposely so we can catch them. MRSA is not the only antibiotic-resistant bug out there now. It's all the bugs. They're all rising up and strengthening. Same thing with the herpes. Herpes is becoming immune to the pharmaceuticals that are prescribed for herpes simplex 1, herpes simplex 2. They're actually getting stronger as the years go by. They're getting used to the pharmaceuticals. All of them are. And all of the bugs are mutating, strengthening, and growing. But yet, our pharmaceuticals are not getting stronger or working more effectively. It's like they're behind on pharmaceuticals treating all of these bugs. Pharmaceutical antivirals aren't doing the job of suppressing the viruses as much as they did in the past. Pharmaceutical antibiotics are not suppressing the bacteria like they did in the past. And because of that, plus some other things and other factors, STIs are on the rise. Sex isn't on the rise. Sex is relatively the same, but the STIs are not the same anymore. They're rising and rising fast. So what do we do? Where's the hope? Well, to begin with, this isn't about not going to your doctors. Because yes, an antibiotic might be the very thing you need to actually dumb that infection down and bring it down, or help you so you can get a strep infection down so you don't end up getting sepsis, especially if you're bleeding or if you have another problem or you're severely inflamed or fevered up. It's not about avoiding the doctor, and it's not about avoiding the doctor's guidance or advice. It's about protecting yourself along the way, alongside of it all. Or if you're somebody where the antibiotics don't work anymore, you're going to every doctor you can find, you've taken all the different varieties of antibiotics and antivirals that the doctor has to offer, and nothing fixes it, and you're suffering, and you're living in misery. Or if you're somebody that has a past where you had infections before, and you may not know, you could have some still dormant and left in your system, or a weakened immune system where you need support so you don't easily catch another bug. You might be somebody that had a chlamydia infection 20 years ago or 3 years ago, or some other type of bacterial infection that was unknown, but just the doctor said it's a bacterial infection. Or you're somebody that had strep or even hepatitis, and it was in the past and it's gone. Or it's creeping around and you know it is, and you're getting told by your doctor, or you just have symptoms that resemble the what you felt in the past. Symptoms that are like, do I still have it? I still have problems. I'm getting some type of issue here, or an itch or a burn. What could this be? Whatever is going on, whatever your past is or whatever happened, it's good to have something that's helping you now in the moment, something in a natural field that's helping you. Have you ever heard of golden seal? Golden seal. You might have heard of it. You might have had it before. Maybe you had a little bit of golden seal in a supplement that you were taking a while back with other things as well, other herbs. Golden seal is a win-win. It helps to stabilize the immune system. It also helps to break down and inhibit and destroy and prohibit bacteria from growing and exploding and proliferating. Golden seal is a poison to bacteria, bad bacteria. It's not a poison to good bacteria, but it's a poison to STD bacteria, STI bacteria, and other bacteria as well. Chlamydia, syphilis, gonorrhea, other bacterial infections that are STIs, STDs, bacterial infections, do not like golden seal. It has phytochemical compounds that affect bacteria, weaken it, break it down, and destroy it in many cases. Very, very strong bacteria that's passed around from person to person to person for decade to decade still gets affected by golden seal, meaning it doesn't get immune to it. So that bacteria like chlamydia does not get immune to golden seal. Any kind of bacteria doesn't get immune to golden seal. And it isn't just using golden seal, it's learning how to use golden seal. And golden seal without different things that are bad for you in the golden seal, like alcohol and other preservatives and so forth. It's about finding a golden seal, the right one, and then learning how to use it. We're always relying on our immune system. We're relying on it to clean up the mess. We're asking our immune system every single day, you take care of all that mess, whatever it is, and let me live my life. So if you get an STI, an STD, or any kind of bacteria, even if it's not that, you picked something up like strep off of a shopping cart handle, whatever it is, we rely on our immune system to regulate it, to field it, to take care of it while we live our life and move on. Golden seal supports the immune system, where the immune system gets a break, it gets to recharge, it gets to recalibrate and strengthen, and it doesn't have to go into war totally all the time. Instead, the golden seal is doing some work. It's there, it's touching the bugs, it's destroying a lot of the bugs, it's keeping them regulated, so the immune system gets to recharge and strengthen and doesn't get overused all the time trying to manage the bugs. And then there's propolis. Propolis. Now, when I say propolis, I'm looking at something entirely different now, because it's not just bacteria, which propolis helps defend us from. It's also viruses, viral issues. And golden seal is even helpful for all the viral issues as well. But propolis, that is a powerhouse for the STIs, STDs in the viral world, like herpes simplex 1, the cold sore, the fever blister, and herpes simplex 2, the breakouts on the genitals, other areas of the body. These right here, that's the viruses, that's some of them. There's other ones too that get contracted and get transferred to other people through sexual activity in other ways too, just in public arena, the public bathrooms, restaurants, everywhere you can actually have public contact, like drinking off of people's bottles or glasses. But either way, these bugs don't like propolis. They hate it. Propolis is antiviral. It is a weapon against these bugs. So if you're somebody that's sexually active, you're sexually on the scene, you're dating a lot, keeping propolis and keeping golden seal in hand is really helpful. And if you're somebody that's not sexually active, but you have bugs in you for various reasons, or you got chronic illness and you're chronically sick, could be anything, the Epstein-Barr, the shingles, cytomegalovirus, maybe you're dealing with HPV, maybe you have something else going on, but whatever it is, having propolis, having golden seal in hand is important. It's a critical foundation. So if you're somebody that has a cold sore, a fever blister, you got a breakout, putting propolis directly on the cold sore, directly on the breakout, is a powerful way of killing off the virus and getting rid of that sore. Same thing goes with canker sores. And canker sores too, we can pass those on to other people. That's a virus in the herpes family as well. People who have mouth ulcers, they may not be a sexually transmitted herpes simplex 2 or chlamydia, a bacteria. That's a little different in many ways, but cold sores are in the same family. Simplex 1 is in the same family as canker sores. They are related, and we can pass the canker sore virus on to other people, so they end up getting canker sores inside their mouth, which are these mouth ulcers. And propolis helps to get rid of those. Some people, it's a miracle. They suffer and they have dime-sized canker sores in their mouth, on their gums, on the insides of their cheek, down their throat. And the propolis gets rid of them when nothing else could get rid of them. And if you have a partner that you're suspicious of having a low-grade infection of some kind underneath it all, or something that's slightly dormant, or they're exhibiting some kind of symptom, but yet it doesn't warrant seeing a doctor because they're not going to a doctor for some reason. If you think that they have something or they're harboring something that you may have contracted from them or maybe not contracted, either way, they should be on Golden Seal. They should be on propolis as well. Keep in mind, for some people, they may need just a little bit of propolis and a little bit of Golden Seal, and they don't need a lot, just some to manage or help along the way or support. And then there's some people that are going to need more than that. They're going to need more than just, say, one little dose or a few drops. They're going to need a lot more. And then there's the quality aspect. What propolis is it? What Golden Seal is it? Does it have natural flavors in it? Does it have alcohol in it? Does it have a preservative in it? Does it have hidden ingredients in it? And is it really weak? And what's the real source of it? Because there's a lot of bad products out there and a lot of bad Golden Seal. There is hope, and there's ways of using herbs to really move somebody forward and heal, like get better and move past it and get rid of the bacteria, get rid of even the viruses, and move past it. And if you get a chance, check out Brain Saver Protocols. There's actual protocols in there to use Golden Seal and to use propolis, like the propolis shock therapy and the Golden Seal shock therapy. So, I'm here. What is it? Because I'm nervous. Yeah. The doctor has an answer. He's coming in. Okay. Hi, doctor. Yeah. Am I feeling better? Feeling a little better. So what's the problem? There was a grain of rice stuck? A grain of rice stuck in there? How did that happen? I don't know. I was rolling around on the ground, I guess, and I was rolling on a whole bunch of rice because I was at my friend's wedding. They threw rice in the air, you know, when they tied the knot, and it was everywhere. I wonder if that's where I got that. It's pre-planned from the beginning. The hierarchy wants the people to be sick for a lifetime span, keeps the machine winning. It's historic. It's antiquity, purposely. Awareness is weak because they don't want people to not partake. They don't want people to go on a dry streak. You go to school, you're taught. Science has you protected. Science is God. You're a fool if you doubt their cult and their science laws. You will never get tripped up. They make you feel you will never get caught. And if you do, they offer the one-size-fits-all antibiotic route. But it's never been said that they offer the same for every cough. As time went on, the bug world grew tough. Tougher for some, and then tougher for others later. Eventually making it so the world might even stop. Like it did 2,000 years ago in Rome, when things got out of hand in the bedrooms, which caused the empire to fall due to brain rot. But there is hope. The human race doesn't have to succumb from being outrun by pathogen fun. There are nature weapons in our hands we possess that can stop bugs from running our lives and keeping us from expiring. We can overcome our suffering and rise above the pain and heal, move forward, and live free another day.
Original published medical medium information gets stolen and poached by podcast doctors, social media doctors, influencers, and medical clinics. Medical medium information has never yet been proven wrong by medical science and research. Instead, the opposite, only proven right and then taken from medical medium published material and used in the conventional and alternative health communities. Medical medium information continually sets the stage for medical science to understand chronic illness better. If you choose to share or use the original, unique content from the Medical Medium podcast, books, or Medical Medium social media, please cite where this information comes from, so others who see and learn of this information have a chance to know where it all originates, to give them an opportunity to heal, so they don't end up losing years of their life searching for answers like so many have before them. The Medical Medium information here on this podcast doesn't come from broken science, interest groups, medical funding with strings attached, botched research, lobbyists, internal kickbacks, persuaded belief systems, private panels of influencers, health field payoffs, trendy traps, or gathered bits and pieces of gimmicky confusion. Because chronic illness is exploding like never before in our modern day history, it takes a greater force than us down here. It takes a helping hand from above. Medical Medium information has street cred. It's an organic movement of countless people around the world healing. More healing stories of real people not being paid to tell their life-changing experiences of rising out of the ashes of sickness and entering into the light of full recovery, getting their lives back and finally healing when nothing else in the world of health could move the needle and get them better. The information on this podcast is not man-made. It comes from above, from a higher source. Whatever you believe in, whether God, the universe, the light, or the creator, or if you believe in nothing at all, that we're just floating through space together on this rock, know that the information you hear on this podcast is separate from all the other noise out there. It comes from a different place, a pure, untampered with, advanced, clean, uncorrupted, original, primary source, a higher source, spirit of compassion.